Welcome to episode 94 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now in this episode, I had on Shannon Shai. Shannon is the president of the board of directors for the ISDF, that's the International OCD Foundation in the United States of America. He's a peer support specialist, practicing attorney, among many other things. He's written a couple books. And it was great to get him on. He does a lot on Facebook with regards to sort of advocate and recovery advice. He gives some really good sort of snippets on there, and I encourage you to follow his page. All the information will be in the show notes on the website. I asked him about his OCD story. It's really fascinating, you know, his recovery, some of the bits he talks about on his Facebook page. I asked for his advice for those who have been newly diagnosed. That's newly, I'm not sure if I pronounced that right. Words of advice for those struggling in therapy currently, and words of advice for those kind of struggling to get that last bit of motivation to finally kind of get rid of the last part of OCD. Asking about his best advice he's ever been given, his advice for amazing life, and much more. It was a really interesting chat with Shannon. I enjoyed catching up with him and chatting with him. He has a lot to offer those with OCD. So sit back, listen, and enjoy. On today's show, I have Shannon Shai. Shannon is the president of the board of directors for the ISDF and an OCD peer support specialist. He is also an attorney for the Department of US Navy, a retired Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel, and the author of two books about obsessive compulsive disorder, It'll Be Okay, How I Kept OCD from Ruining My Life, and Hope is on Your Side, a motivational journey for those affected by OCD. Welcome to the podcast, Shannon.
Hi, thank you, Stuart.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. I briefly met you at the conference this year. I keep thinking it's last year, but yeah, seems so long ago now. So I guess, were you happy with the conference? Did it go well, as expected?
Oh yeah, you know, the IOCDF conference is an amazing event. And I think I've been to 8 of them, and you know, at the end of it, you say, wow, I mean, how could this be topped? I mean, this is just such an experience for people, you know, no one really wants to leave. And then the IOCDF, amazingly, they have an amazing executive director and a staff, but they top it every year. I mean, they do something, you know, that really, really takes it, you know, one step further. So it's just, it really, I look forward to it each year. And I love, it's unique in this sense that you have, you know, sufferers, family members and friends, and the mental health providers that are all there for 4 days. And, you know, you can walk down the hall and talk to the world's leading experts on obsessive compulsive disorder. And they're very giving of their time. And there's just something for everyone. So, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I completely agree. It was great fun, and I agree. I love the fact that you've got professionals and sort of patients there, and everyone's mingling, and you don't get that at other conferences. It's right. Usually a divide right between clinicians and clients or patients. So it's nice. It's a really good, friendly atmosphere. But it'd be good to hear your OCD story, and you can go into as little, as much detail as you want.
Okay, well, I was diagnosed with OCD back in 1997 while I was on active duty with the Marine Corps. And I had suffered for many years, not knowing what was wrong, but knowing that something was definitely wrong. And it was, I can look, now knowing what was wrong with me, I can look back into my college days and say, yeah, that was probably OCD. And it trickled throughout, but it didn't really hit me or start hitting me hard until about 1992. I was in California in the Marine Corps, and my first son was born. And then so between 1992 and 1997, it progressively got worse. Just started having really bizarre thoughts and, you know, very odd behaviors. But it consumed me. And so by the time that I was diagnosed in October of 1997, OCD had basically taken over my life. It consumed me every waking moment. Everything was a trigger. And it was primarily thoughts about harming other people, thoughts about being responsible for the safety of other people, and not wanting to disappoint anybody. So on one morning in October of 97, I had this memorable episode that caused me not to be able to get to work. I just kept turning around. I thought I had heard a gunshot and thought I had seen the perpetrator of the gunshot. Finally found two police cars sitting in this strip mall, and walked up to them sheepishly and said, "Hey, probably nothing, but you know, about 45 minutes ago, I think I heard a gunshot." And they were looking at me like I was from Mars, and they said, "Look, this is Jacksonville, North Carolina. We, you know, if there was a gunshot, we would know about it." And they said, "Go on your way." You know, so I just sat in my car, and I cried, and I said, "My life is over." So for about the 2 years before I decided to be seen that day, I thought to myself, "Hey, it would be better just simply to be dead than to live like this." I had grown up being a leader, social athlete, and I had become this very odd, quirky little man, you know, and I didn't want to kill myself. But I didn't want to live like this. And I now attribute this to OCD, but I said, you know, look, if you call a psychiatrist or a mental health provider, and if you were tagged with a mental illness, then the Marine Corps is going to kick you out. You're going to lose your job, you're going to lose your livelihood of practicing law, and you're going to lose your family. And so those were my choices at the time. And I chose the least worst of those choices. And I called a psychiatrist that day and went in and I was diagnosed. So after the diagnosis, you know, I put on medications. There's a behavioral therapy with a psychologist there. And then through that process, I developed my own strategy of how I was going to deal with OCD. And I had lots of failures, but I persisted and I just kept applying the same strategy. And I progressively got better and continued to get better. So fast forward to 2003, my psychiatrist at the time asked me, he said, "How long are you going to stay on medication?" Because I was forgetting to take my medication because I was doing so well. And I said, "I'll stay on medication for as long as I live, if it means I can deal with OCD like this." And he got angry with me for dramatic purposes. He stood up and he slammed his fist on his desk and he says, "I don't know why we all have to be so GD perfect," and it kind of shocked me. And he said, "It's not medicine. It's your strategy, right? It's how you deal with this." And so we weaned me off medication, and I haven't seen doctors or taken medication since 2003 for OCD, and I progressively got better. And so I'm at a point now where OCD literally doesn't affect me at all, right? So the last intrusive thought that I remember having that I would attribute to OCD that caused me anxiety was in 2010. And I caught myself and said, "Hey, you know what this is." And you know, went on about my business. So I got into the business of advocacy. I don't mean to make this a monologue, Stuart. Sorry.
That's good.
I got into the business of advocacy as a result of a conversation I had over dinner with a colleague in 2006. She confided with me that she had this thing called OCD, and she said, "It's killing me. I don't know what to do." And I was like, because up to that time, between the time basically I was diagnosed and 2006, I had stopped telling people that I had OCD.
Yeah.
I wanted to be as far from OCD as I possibly could be. I just wanted the old me back. I didn't want to be labeled, judged, mocked.
Yeah.
You know, all the stuff that comes with stigma. And so I was like, oh, I don't want to tell her. But I did. I said, there's something that you don't know about me. Told her my story, how I did it. And she wrote me about 6 months later and she said, you've changed my life. She goes, you really need to tell your story. So that's when I decided to write my first book. And then after that, the International OCD Foundation called me in 2010 and asked me to be the keynote at their conference in Washington, D.C. They said that, you know, you're in the military, or you work for the military, we're in D.C., this would be perfect, you know. So I said, sure, absolutely. And from there, you know, the IOCD, they asked me to be on their board. And then mostly what I do now is on Facebook and peer support. So the long and short of that is this. In 2012, I started a Facebook page called Shannon Shy, OCD Can Be Defeated, I'm Living Proof. And the object or the objective of the page is to hopefully provide motivation and insight. So what I go on there just about every day, sometimes I miss, just to write something, hopefully short and pithy, but, you know, something that people can walk away and say, okay, I have a little better understanding, I have more insight, I'm motivated, and it's followed like in 48 countries now, and I try to answer everybody who asks me a question on the page. That Facebook page concept turned into my second book. It's a motivational journal, for a year-long motivational journal with goal setting and all of that. And then finally, for the peer support, I was contacted in 2015 by a therapist friend of mine in Boston, and she said, hey, I have a friend who suffers very badly from contamination OCD. She won't eat. She's afraid she'll poison herself, and she won't leave her house because she's afraid she'll come into contact with people who have come into contact with people from countries that have the Ebola outbreak. And I said, well, I'm happy to talk with her, but who knows if she'll talk back to me, right? Or talk with me. So I contacted her, and she did. Her name is Jen, and I can say her name because she publicly goes out now and tells people that the support that I provided her basically saved her life. And I don't say that in a bragging way. I only say that because I think peer support can really help. It's not therapy. But I got... We had some relatively intense phone conversations, and she called me one day when she was staring at this plate of macaroni and cheese, and she goes, I want to eat it, but I can't. And so we just talked about, you know, changing perspective and motivation as to why we push through the anxiety. And so, you know, she started to eat. So now she's at a place where she can eat whatever she wants. She goes wherever she wants. And, it warmed my heart. She, at that moment, started eating her macaroni and cheese, and so her clinical social worker called me and said, "Hey, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it. If you get trained in this discipline called peer support, then I'll refer my clients to you." And so I do that part time, nights and weekends, helping people. And I've, you know, probably have seen somewhere around 75, 80 people in the past year. And most folks stay with me for 4 to 8 sessions. Some stay longer. Some use it for, you know, life coaching, others. But it's a way to continue to try to help people. And again, the peer support, it's not therapy. It's really just... insight from lived experience, and I try to teach people how to motivate. I give them insight as to my experience. I'm not treating them in the mental health professional sense of the word. So yeah, it's very rewarding, Stuart. I really, really enjoy doing it.
Yeah, no, it sounds good. And thank you for going into so much detail. It's always good to fully understand. There are many things in your story which I found fascinating. I won't pick up on them all, but one was just like, you know, that in 97 where you were torn between, you know, do I potentially lose my career, family, etc., which was the fear, or do I pick up this phone and call a psychiatrist? And, you know, you picked up the phone, and that one simple decision, although tough, you know, changed everything. And you're here now talking to me because of that decision.
I tell everybody that was the single most important decision I ever made in my life. And it was the best decision I made. People ask me all the time, they say, well, should I disclose that I have this because, you know, I'm at work and I'm security clearance and blah, blah, blah. And my response is, you know, I can't guarantee that you're not going to lose your job if you disclose this. I can say this. Even had I lost my job, it would have been the best decision for me to make.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't continue the destructive path that I was on, right? It was affecting my relationship with my wife, with my children, with my future. And I would have found a way to make a living. Right. I'm resilient in that sense. You know, I had a wife and two kids depending on me. I would have found a way to make a living.
Yeah.
Even if it had not been. But I needed to get my life back from, you know, the iron fist of OCD. And so I did. Unfortunately, I wasn't kicked out, and I continued my career. And I'm still working as a civilian with the Department of the Navy. My leaving the Marine Corps had nothing to do with OCD. It was really a life choice between me and my wife. But the getting back to a place where you can function, right? And I absolutely, well, let me say it this way. So when I work with people now, the very first two questions I ask them, and that we talk about in our second session, is, do you believe that it's possible to get better? And the second question is, why? Do you want to get to a place where OCD doesn't adversely affect your life? And those are critical questions. I call the first one hope. I call the second one motivation. Because as you go through recovery and trying to do the things that make OCD weaker, thinking back to something in your brain that's saying, yes, I'm doing this because I believe it actually is possible to get better, and I'm doing this for really, really good reasons that are important to me, helps you push through that anxiety. And I believe that there are four things that are necessary for a successful recovery. The first is desire, right? I want to get better. The second one is this thing I call hope, and I'll explain why I call it hope in a second, but it's this belief that I'm not doing this in vain. It actually is possible to get better. Third is motivation, right? All the reasons why I'm willing to endure this pain of doing the things that make OCD weaker. And the fourth one is a strategy, right? What am I going to do when these thoughts come? When I have this anxiety, when I have this compulsion, what am I going to do? And the simpler your strategy, the better, because it's something that you can implement over and over and over again. Back to hope. The day after I was diagnosed in 1997, I went to a bookstore in Jacksonville, North Carolina, to read about OCD. And what the heck is, you know, what is this?
Yeah.
I was actually relieved that there was a name for what was affecting me. first book I picked up, I read two things. One of them demoralized me, the other one devastated me. So the demoralizing piece was I read that OCD cannot be cured. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be like this forever. I am going to be like this forever, right? The reason I called the doctor was I didn't want to be like this forever. And I just, you know, all the wind was, you know, all the air was sucked out of the balloon. And that's how I was like, oh. Then I read something that devastated me. It was certain kinds of thoughts that OCD people can have. And I had never had those. And guess what happened next, right? So they just keep flooding in. But on the cure piece, I talked to my psychiatrist about it when I saw him. I said, you know, you didn't tell me this part, you know, that it can't be cured. And he said, well, you know, that's debated in the medical profession, this subject of cure. He said, what I would never want you to forget is that it's possible to get better, right? So just focus on that. And I said, okay. I didn't know that what he was saying to me was true, but it's all I had. And I accepted it and said, okay. He said it was possible to get better. So if that is actually true, I will do whatever I have to do to get better. And I made a commitment to myself, right? You're going to do whatever they say to you to do. And I did. And then that's how I got on to developing my strategy. But that little beacon of hope, right? That little light in the lighthouse kept me going.
Yeah.
And I said, you're not doing this in vain, right? There's something out there. So I just kept going. And whenever I would give into a compulsion and OCD would try to make me beat myself up, right? Tell me, hey, you're never going to get better. This is futile. You might as well just take the easy road and give in, you know, and just let me be here. I said, no, I'm treating that as an OCD thought too. And I dusted myself off and I kept going, moved forward. Right. So this is a journey. And when I talk to people about it, about their own recovery, I said, think of it as a journey, right? Twists and turns, ups and downs. Some days it'll be like you're walking up a mountain in the rain and it's cold and you got a heavy pack on. Other days it's like you're walking downhill, sun shining in your face. The point is keep moving forward. Keep moving forward. And don't focus on whether you're better day to day, week to week, month to month. Just simply focus on doing the things that make OCD weaker when OCD is, you know, knocking at the door. Ultimately, you want to be able to just pledge to yourself that you're going to walk boldly through each day, every day. And we're not going to fear the triggers, right? We welcome triggers as opportunities to get better. That's what they are, right? I have a trigger. Cool. This is my opportunity to do something that helps me to get better. Go. So again, sorry for the monologue.
No, it's good. So similar to on that note about kind of keep moving, you put on Facebook, which I really liked, especially the last bit, it's you put, do not fear the unknown, information is your friend and action is your ally. And especially that last bit, action is your ally. You know, sometimes people, especially if depression's in tow, it can be very hard to feel like you want to do anything, or even if it's just OCD, it can be very scary and unmotivating. I guess, how do you commit to taking that daily action, to whether it's, you know, doing the homework from CBT, or whether it's, I don't know, doing something you set out to do that you knew would be meaningful to you? Is there any right. kind of way to amp yourself up?
Yeah. So if you think about, this applies, what I'm about to say applies to life generally,
yeah.
Okay? You can think of it in terms of mental health recovery, but it applies to life generally. So you think about moving forward, whether it's in recovery of OCD or dealing with any other mental illness and everything else in your life as having a foundation, right? You're built on a solid foundation. And so part of this foundation is what I talked about before, desire, hope, motivation, right? And then you have your strategy. So if you think about, you know, what is my objective, you know, and so it could be my objective is to be able to function at a point where OCD is not adversely affecting my life. My objective is, if I have depression, to function even though I'm feeling this way, right? Yeah. Or any other goal you set in your life. The action is your ally actually came about from this concept of dealing with a mental illness and also having to deal with lots of other things in your life, right? That you get adversity in your life. It could be finances, it could be relationships, whatever. And sometimes it feels like the life itself or the world itself is kind of bearing down on you, right? And oppressing you. And what I tell people is, if you slow things down and you break them down into their fundamental parts, right? The core fundamental concepts of whatever it is you're working at, and you simply say, okay, I need to do something to work on the target closest to me, right? Or the problem closest to me, the biggest thing here. This is what I'm going to do right now. If you do that with things in your life, right, you start taking action. When you make a positive move towards solving something in your life, it gives you energy. It gives you a sense of accomplishment, right? It gives you a feeling of empowerment. And so, in your life, if you take action on something, it actually, you know, makes the energy meter go up, if you will. Same with OCD. You do something that moves you towards recovery. You do something that makes OCD weaker. That gives you empowerment. You feel stronger when you do it. It's painful, but you feel stronger when you do it.
Yeah.
So taking action in each of those in your life and in OCD or any other mental illness, taking action to do something that helps you, doing that helps you with the other. So if I do something that helps me make OCD, that will help me get to a place where I can do something to help me in my life, whether it's finances, just think of any normal, regular problem in life. If I do something that helps me in my life, finances, relationships, etc., that's going to put me in a better position to do something that makes OCD weaker or any other mental illness, is my theory. So again, I just tell people, action is your ally. If you start taking action, really in everything in your life that you're confronted with, you will be better off. You will feel more empowered. And with regard to OCD relative to life, doing something that makes OCD weaker helps you in life generally. And doing something in your life that helps you improve your life will help you in your recovery against OCD. So just a theory that I subscribe to that worked for me.
Yeah, no, I like it. It's a really good way of looking at it. And that whole bit about, it kind of reminds me of was the saying, what goes in motion stays in motion. That the hardest thing is just to get the ball rolling.
Right.
But when you do, that momentum carries you. And for me, that's where motivation, sometimes we look at motivation as something to kind of get started, but I like motivation from a continuation point of view. So it's almost like willpower to get going. And then motivation is that, that momentum, once you have it, you're kind of unstoppable, for want of a better
Absolutely.
Word.
Yeah. That's a perfect way of describing it. I couldn't agree more. That's a lot of the people that I work with, right? That's the first thing that they come to the table with. It's, I just don't know how to get started, what to do. And I said, that's, you know, I think back to the Christmas cartoon, where they're just saying, I don't even remember the name, but the song is just put one foot in front of the other, right?
Yeah.
And that's where that's how you do it. You just take a step. And in fact, my second book is in addition to being a year-long motivational journal, every week I challenge the reader to set a goal. It doesn't have to be about OCD recovery. It could be anything. And then write down two meaningful steps that you will take to try to meet your goal, right? So that's a great way of thinking about all of this is, you know, have a plan and say, what can I do? What action can I take that will help me achieve this goal? And it could be any goal. But if you actually think about what you're going to do to accomplish that goal, you've basically solved 90% of the problem. The rest is doing it, but once you know what you're going to do, because so many people get into these indecision, boxes, and they don't ever take that next step. So just plan what you're going to do and commit to doing it, right? And chances are, if you do that, you're going to actually take the action necessary to do what you need to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I love that. Okay, so I got three sections now, which are like kind of, I'll ask the first question, so otherwise I'll give it away. Any words of advice for those newly diagnosed with OCD?
Well, the first thing I'm going to say is not advice. It is a recognition of, again, what I call hope, but just know that it's possible to get better. And the importance of those words cannot be overstated. If I could only say one sentence to anybody who has been diagnosed with OCD, that's what I would say.
Yeah.
It's possible to get better. So if I'm allowed more words, I would add, hey, it's not easy, right? Nothing I say is easy to do, but if you know that it's possible to get better and you're willing to do the work, you will get better. You will get better. There are different techniques, that therapists give on how to do this. My own, the strategy that I developed was one of indifference to OCD, not giving it value, and that helped me to resist giving into the compulsions. Therapists have different strategies. Like I said, some say, "Hey, just assume that it's all true, right?" And learn to live with the anxiety, habituate to it, and that way you can function. But whatever the strategy that works for you, it's important to be consistent and it's important to be persistent, right? Because OCD is going to ramp it up, so you have to understand how OCD works. When OCD, I always talk of OCD in the third, not the third person, the third entity. But so OCD depends upon your participation for its existence here. It depends upon you giving it some emotional, mental, or physical response. So it is going to do everything it can within its power to get you to quit.
Yeah.
Quit the fight. So it's going to wrap it up. In my own case, I had mentioned earlier in this call that OCD affected me, harm, responsibility, a sense of needing, not wanting to let other people down. After I was diagnosed, OCD morphed on me. It didn't get rid of the ones that I had, but it added violence and sex, religion, and maybe one or two others that, it just kept coming at me and just stepped up its game to try to intimidate me into quitting. And, I said, no, all right, I'm in this to win it, right? I said, if what my doctor said was actually true about it's possible to get better, I will do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And so I did. And so my advice is just, think about desire, hope, motivation, strategy, and then implement that strategy consistently and persistently and hang in there, because it actually is possible to get better.
Yeah. Yeah. Great advice. And the whole consistency and persistency, I think, needs to be emphasized as well, because a lot of times I hear from people is like, I tried this thing, a few times it didn't work. And it's like, okay, we'll try it 100 more times for a month, much longer. I think we try one thing, it's not kind of a miracle cure, forget it, need the next piece of information, as people with anxiety and OCD often do. And I've done this, and often a new change came for me when I committed to consistent action and persistently, and not kind of kept skimming from information to information. So the next part is kind of words of advice for those struggling in therapy. So I saw this question more of those kind of in that kind of middle section of recovery, where they've been in it for a while and it's quite tough. Kind of any words for them?
Yeah, that's always a tough one, because I try not to even slightly suggest that what a therapist is doing is wrong.
Yeah.
Right? That's not my role. But what I would say is kind of a repeat of what you just said. Stick with it.
Yeah.
Because all too often, we want signs of, hey, I feel better today, right? And one of the ways OCD tripped me up initially is I was expecting, maybe even demanding, immediate results, and they weren't coming. And so I'm like, come on, I'm doing this wrong. And OCD was actually offering me all of these ideas. Hey, you're doing this wrong. This isn't going to work. Blah blah blah. But I learned that I wasn't able to ever convince myself, because of OCD, that I was getting better. Right now. So I stopped measuring my immediate progress, and I said, I simply need to focus on what I think is going to make OCD weaker, right? The strategy that my doctor gave me, that I, elaborated on and said, okay, this is what I think is going to work. OCD was trying to tell me every day, hey, what you've developed here isn't working. It's not working, right? So I'm still here. You're still anxious. You still think you're leaving people to die. So obviously what you're doing is not working. And I said, okay, stop trying to figure out whether you're better day to day, week to week, month to month. and just start focusing on doing these things.
Yeah.
Persistently and consistently. Do it, right? So what I would offer first for people who are in therapy and say, I'm just not getting it, stick with it. That's, you know, stay in the program. Do it. So having said all of that, I do work with some people who've come to me who have left therapy because, you know, they didn't like assuming everything was true about all these horrible thoughts in their head, or they weren't ready to go to that level of the hierarchy on the exposure, and it scared the heck out of them. And so they come, you know, and they see the way I do things. And I never tell anybody that the way I approached OCD recovery is the answer or the particular answer for any particular person. I just know how I did it, right?
Yeah.
I'm very clear with everybody. I'm not saying don't do what your therapist is saying. And actually I always say do what your therapist is telling you to do. If you come to me, I'm not telling you to do my way. I can only tell you how I did it and how I thought about it. And much of my success came from just changing the way I thought about all of this. I call it my perspective and attitude. I changed it. And this is my approach, the way I thought about it. And I had a warrior attitude about fighting OCD. Like I said, I'm not going to, you know, I looked at OCD as an enemy that was trying to destroy me and my family. And so when you're trying to destroy my family, that gets extra personal. And I said, I'm not going to let that happen. How could I let that happen? How could I, in good conscience, as a dad of two young boys, let, you know, anything try to destroy my family? And so I rose to the occasion and did what I needed to do, and it worked.
Yeah.
So I am where I am, right? So my advice is hang in there. And as you said, Stuart, you know, do it consistently and persistently, you know, do it once, 100, do it 1,000, right? Stay in there and do it. The therapist, you know, they have, they have methods that are proven that help people, you know, recover from OCD. And I had, again, my approach was my approach, and it allowed me to push through.
Yeah, good advice. Yeah, I like that. And at the next kind of third part to this question was the kind of final stage. So what I noticed a lot of people, and this in my own life as well, is you get kind of 85, 95% of the way there, you know, you've beaten the worst of it, so to speak, you know, you've got control of your life, but it's still there on the occasional day. Sometimes you have to deal with it for longer periods, but because it's not there consistently, you kind of let it be. And because you've kind of done the 100%, I guess, what advice do you have for those that are not currently motivated or wanting to get rid of that last 10%?
So I don't know that being 100% necessarily needs to be the goal, right? Because that plays into OCD's hands.
True.
I got to where I am because I didn't care whether OCD was present or not. Right. And yeah. People ask all the time, aren't you afraid that it's going to come back? And I say no, because I know what I'll do if it does. I'm truly indifferent about OCD's existence in my life.
Yeah.
I'm thankful that it's not here. That's awesome. But it really doesn't matter to me whether it comes back or not. And I tell people in recovery who, you know, they suffer some, you know, setback or even a relapse. You know, I said, look, change your perspective. The fact that you've had a setback or a relapse is really only evidence that you've made progress before. And if you've made progress before, you can do it again. So it's really more of a motivational kind of thing. And so I would just simply, instead of measuring progress, you know, 80%, 90%, 100%, just simply say, when OCD comes around, I know what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I know what I'm going to do. And practice some emotional even flow, because OCD, you know, it strikes when you are vulnerable. And one of those vulnerabilities is when you're in a heightened emotional state. So if you try not to get too frustrated, too angry, too sad, etc., when OCD comes knocking, you're in a better position to deal with the thought and the compulsion when they come. So just keep moving forward. It's you don't have to have a 100% goal, right? Just the goal is, I need to be able to know what to do when OCD comes around. That's my goal. That's what I'm going to do. And I don't care whether it comes around or not. So, excuse me. So it's like, I liken the journey to playing chess with a cheater. So you sit down, and you know, I always thought of it as, you know, in a park where they have chess tables sitting out there, and, you know, people can just randomly come and play a game of chess against a stranger. So you're sitting there, and the person sits down to play chess with you, and you are following the rules, right? You're making the move, and the person who sat down is a cheater. And no matter what you do to move, the cheater just grabs a piece and moves it wherever he wants to take your chess piece. And at first you kind of go, what the heck? And then it happens again. And so you finally say, you know, screw this. I'm not going to play this game with you. Right?
Yeah.
I don't care what you do. I'm not playing. So you sit there. And the cheater gets mad, maybe knocks all the chess pieces off the table, throws a, you know, a child temper tantrum. But you say, whatever, I'm not participating. Right? You do what you feel you need to do. I'm not participating in this. And then finally the cheater realizes that he can't get a response from you and he leaves. So that was my OCD recovery. Right? I finally decided that I wasn't going to participate in the destruction of my life. And CD got the message and left. Do I say I'm cured? No, never. I never say that. I think that I'm where I am now and OCD doesn't come around because I don't care whether OCD comes around or not. I really don't, because I know what I'll do.
Yeah, no, I like that. And again, I know you're not doing it for this reason, but saying that you don't care if it comes around is also making it less likely to come around, because you're less anxious about it coming back. And when you're anxious, it's more likely to come back. So that's kind of another, I guess, side benefit of not caring about it. Yeah, no, I like that. This could be OCD related, or this could be just general, but what's the best piece of advice anyone's ever given you?
So in the OCD context, my psychiatrist telling me that it's possible to get better.
Yeah.
Because that actually gave me hope. That's why I call that question, do you believe it's possible to get better? I call that the hope question, because that was pure hope on my part, because I didn't have any stories of success or anything to actually have evidence that that was true. So for me, it was a hope question. I said, hey, or a hope thought. My doctor told me it's possible to get better. So at least I've got some objective that I can try to achieve. So that was so key. I can't even really properly describe it in words about how important that was to me. Because if you could think of any visualize any, you know, analogy of like dark, stormy seas and having some light that you're trying to say, as long as that light is there, I can continue to, you know, negotiate my way through whatever difficulty I have. And it literally kept me going, because I said, he said this, and I told myself I was going to, if that was true, I was going to do whatever I had to do to get there. So that was key. So the good thing for people who are listening to this interview is you don't only need to think of this as hope. You have, and there's a lot of other people besides me, but I can only speak for me. You also have me that you can look at, right? I'm an honest man. Everything I've said about my story is true. You can look at me and say, he did it, right? He actually came from the hell pit, and I was truly in a hell pit back in 1997. I was able to get out of the hell pit. So you can look at me and say, hey, if he can do it, I can do it, right?
Yeah.
We're not, it's the same disorder. So, you know, use it as sort of your energy field, your energy, your force that takes you forward. Because it is difficult, right? You know, OCD feels so real in whatever thought is putting in your head. And it comes with feelings, and it comes with urges, and it comes with lots of other stuff. And trying to wrap your brain around, how do I deal with something that feels so real that I'm so uncertain about? And I, you know, I talk with people, and I've heard everything, I think, you know, from the people I work with about OCD. And I try to, so I talk in visuals a lot.
That's good.
You know, one of the things I try to tell people is, if you think of OCD thoughts and the feelings and the urges and everything in your life as being on one level, one plane, you have the ability to actually rise up and exist on the plane above that plane. So all that nonsense is happening beneath you,
yeah.
And you're able now to come up and live in this higher plane while you're dealing with the lower plane. The other way to think about it is, and this is with everything else in your life. So if you think of OCD, and even if you have other things going on in your life, as a hurricane, right? Just spinning, and you're trapped inside the hurricane and it's all running around you. You have the ability to step out of the hurricane into a place of calm. The hurricane's still spinning, but you now are able to say, okay, I'm here in this place of calm. I can deal with everything that's happening while that hurricane spins. And that, excuse me, being able to put yourself in that position of calm, even though you know that you have this hurricane happening, or in the other sense, even though you know there's another plane of existence of turbulence in your life, but you're above it. You can start making good decisions about what action you're going to take next. Right, so
yeah.
It's really just putting yourself into a position where you're making decisions without feeling like you're under siege, right? So that's what I would tell people, is find a place of calm,
yeah,
and start making decisions about what actions you need to take next to help you with OCD, with your life, whatever. And you can do it. It can be done. And I'm, to quote my Facebook page, I'm living. So.
Awesome. Good advice. And I love the bit about energy fields. I think it's a good way of seeing it separate to yourself and something that's going on and you don't have to partake. You can, in fact, be an observer and act on a different level. So I've got a question here, which is kind of, you know, part of people want to get better because obviously they don't want to be tortured by their thoughts anymore, but also because they want to live the life they want to live. So what advice do you have for people to live an amazing life?
So what I would say is use that as your motivation, right? So if you want to live an amazing life, use the fact that you want to live an amazing life as motivation to push you through the anxiety, push you through the difficulty of doing the things that make OCD weaker, right? So it's motivation for you. And the best way I can think about it is, if you focus on doing the things that make OCD weaker, getting better takes care of itself, right? And so we're always looking for reasons as to why we do difficult, seemingly dangerous, risky things. I think of, in the military terms, you know, why do Marines charge, you know, machine gun nest, right? Well, they're fighting for something that they believe is worth fighting for.
Yeah.
So OCD recovery is a scary thing. And the anxiety can ramp up. But if you can motivate yourself, and you know, with, you know, and that's the motivation question that I ask people: why do you want to get to that place where OCD doesn't adversely affect you? A lot of people come to me and they say, because I want to lead an amazing life, right? Or I have children, I have this and that.
Yeah.
So then remind yourself of that as you're struggling, trying to get through this painful moment. Remind yourself, say, you know, I have a greater goal, you know, than simply trying to make myself feel better right now. I have a greater goal in mind. And I know that if I do what OCD is asking me to do to make myself feel better right now, I'm not going to achieve that goal. And it works. It truly works. But you gotta stay with it, right? Stay with it. And there's too many stories of people who don't. My goal in life is now to try to help people to stay in the fight and get to where they want to be.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. That's good advice. Having like a North Star or a compelling vision, it's going to take you through the tough times, because otherwise in those moments, what's the point? Not what's the point, but what's the point in doing, let's say, the exposure if you don't have a reason why you're doing it? And having that reason why in mind can help you push through the temporary discomfort.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So you've got where are you based at the minute? In Virginia still?
Yeah, I live in Virginia. I work at the Pentagon.
Oh, cool.
So
let's say you've got a billboard outside the Pentagon. What would you want written on that billboard for everyone to see?
So I'm gonna go. this will be a message for everybody, including people who have OCD. I borrow it from a person that I used to work for. So everyone remembers in 2001, the planes going into the World Trade Center and a plane going into the Pentagon. I was on active duty. I was a Marine reservist at the time, but I was on active duty the week before the plane hit the Pentagon. So the day the plane hit the Pentagon, I was across the river back in the Navy Yard. So all day long, I was looking at the Pentagon, seeing where the plane hit, and I'm thinking, oh my God, the people that I work with over there must be all dead. There's no way they could survive that. At that that evening, I was able to talk to the wife of one of the senior civilian attorney who I had worked for, and she said that miraculously they were all able to get out of the Pentagon without being, you know, they were all able to get out. So the number two person in charge, a civilian, his name is Bobby Hogue. 5 years after 9/11, 2001, the Washington Post did a story about him. He was a very successful civilian attorney with the Department of the Navy, and he started just doing things in his life that he had not done before. Right, he was just trying to experience life, and they said, you know, what has motivated you, right, to go out and start doing all these other things in your life? And he said, and this is what I would put on the billboard, I'm not afraid of dying. I'm afraid of not living, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I would tell people. You know, live your life. Live your life to the fullest. It's precious. You are valued. You are special. You are unique. Live your life. And don't let OCD steal it from you, because you have a choice, right? You have a choice to get up from, you know, laying in the corner and letting this disorder abuse you. You have a choice to stand up and say, not one more day am I going to take this, and do what you need to do to make OCD weaker.
Yeah, really good advice. I like that. Great story to go along with it. Yeah, Shannon, you know, that's the end of the interview. I wanted to thank you for your time. I know it's early morning and sounds like you got a cold like myself. Got a blocked nose, which isn't easy to speak right now. But yeah, no, thank you so much for coming on.
Sure, Stuart. Thank you very much for having me. And everybody keep going.
So I hope you enjoyed the episode with Shannon. And it's disclaimer time. This podcast is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek therapy from a trained professional. But once again, I will speak to you again in a week. I hope you enjoy this episode and the future ones coming. Speak soon.